That's, for those of you who don't know, that's an English translation of a very famous sutra taught by the Buddha 2500 and a bit years ago. So it's really, really old.
Thank you.
So it gives a few nice words. It's not particularly sort of religious, just teaching people how to be kind to one another. And also just how to be peaceful. They have words in their life, not to be proud and demanding in nature, being easily satisfied. In other words, noticing the importance of contentment in our life. Because sometimes, you know, we work really hard, and just how much do we need? You know, sometimes it's hard to pay the bills, but, you know, you're okay for today. So learn how to be content. One of my favourite sayings is, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. Which happens. Yeah. So that's wonderful to be able to... Yeah, because you might die tonight. Is your grandfather still alive? There you go, proved it, he's right. So sometimes we do so much in life, and often it's a struggle to survive, and so we have to always to work hard, but it's also really important to learn how to relax and let go. And okay, here we go again, one of my favorite stories. Now, how heavy is a glass of water? It's only heavy when you hold it. The longer you hold it, the heavier it actually feels. And after 3 minutes, you'll be in quite a lot of pain if you hold a glass of water like this. And all you need to do when it gets too heavy to hold comfortably is put it down and rest for a little while. Just for a couple of minutes. And once you've rested your arm, you can pick up the water again and it doesn't feel heavy. The heaviness of life, and the difficulty, the stress, the burden, it's nothing to do with life, honestly. So we don't know how to let it go and relax from time to time. And if we learn how to relax from time to time, let go of all our problems and troubles, then when you go back to them, they're much easier to carry because you've had a rest. And that's one of the reasons why meditation is so useful in our world. Why? We've got permission to use this place for I don't know how many years now. Other groups have come and gone and been chucked out, but we managed to stay here simply because everybody knows now that just a little bit of meditation, a little bit of relaxation saves the government a lot of money. It makes people healthier and happier. And lawyers don't like it because it stops people getting divorced. But other than that, it's a very, very beautiful thing to do, learning how to relax and let go. And it's a weird thing that these days people don't know how to relax. And, you know, even though I go overseas a lot, whenever I go overseas, it's not going on holidays or anything. I haven't been on a holiday for years. I go overseas to work, but I see these other people going on overseas on holiday here, on holiday there. And they get so stressed out going on holidays. I've seen them at airports queuing up and getting very impatient. It doesn't matter how impatient you are, you never get to the front of the queue quicker. So you might as well enjoy it. Just relax in what I call the in-between moments of your life. When you've arrived, but you can't go any further. You're in between destinations. You've arrived at the airport, but you're not boarded the flight yet. You're in between. You left home, but haven't arrived at the office. You've got the dentist surgery, but they haven't called you up for your appointment yet. So much of our life is in between things. And if we know about meditation, we can relax and rest in those in between moments of life. So if you are stuck in a traffic jam somewhere, it's beautiful, relaxing in the traffic jam. It means you don't have to do any work yet. You can enjoy just being there with yourself or listening to some music or listening to one of Ajahn Brahm's podcasts or whatever else it is. But enjoy the moment. And for goodness sake, don't stress out. Learn how to relax in the in-between moments of life. And this is what we're teaching in this meditation. to be able to let go enough so that bodily and mentally you can relax. And when you bodily relax, wow, your body feels so easy and so healthy. I don't know what you think of me, but I went to visit somebody in prison just last week. And when I said, I'm getting old now, I said, ah, come on, 40's not old. I said, I'm 65 this year, next year, or 64. And he said, you can't be 64. You know why? Because I have these wonderful gels which I put on every night on Monday. No, I don't use anything. But it's because you live a life as a monk of, I have a lot of business to do, a lot of things which I get up to, but you don't worry about them. So that means you can have a very healthy body. And so that's something which you can expect when you learn how to relax. Your body gets very, very healthy. Look at this robe which I wear. If you pull this robe too tight, it's going to break sooner or later. And that's sometimes what we do with our body. We're so tight, we pull it, stretch it, we put it under so much pressure that sooner or later it does break. When you relax, like a monk's robe, I remember giving a talk to these executives in Perth, in Netherlands, years ago. And one of the executives, they said, it's interesting because she was brought up in a Catholic school by nuns. And the nuns were so tight, even their dresses, their, what they call, habits or wimples or whatever it's called, they were just so tight. And that's what they were like. And you Buddhist monks, you're all over the place. Nice and loose. And he said, that's your character too. So I see it also be this loose in your life, so you don't get so tight, so stressed. So, that's what meditation is. So how do we actually do this? To really learn how to relax fully. Because these people who go on holidays, they don't know how to relax at all. They're just so tense. So, how you relax is learning how, first of all, this mindfulness business, which is really popular in this world. And it's great coming to Armadale because you can learn it for free. Yeah, they charge a fortune for these mindfulness courses, and you get it absolutely for free from the very best teachers. So the mindfulness, which is just your awareness, so you know exactly what's going on. And the point is with mindfulness, it's where you focus it is most important. So everyone is aware of something, but they're usually aware of the wrong things. So now we're going to be aware in this meditation, first of all, of the body in which you live. It's amazing just how unaware people are of their body. When I was a young monk in Thailand, we wouldn't have any shoes to wear because very poor part of the world, and so we'd have to be walking barefoot all over the place. We'd always be stubbing our toes or piercing the foot with stones or roots, always having these plasters all over the body. And my teacher, the Thai monks never had any of those, he said, you Westerners have got stupid feet. That's a lovely way of putting it. You're in your head thinking about all these amazing philosophies and the meaning of life, and you weren't really mindful of where you're putting your feet. That's why I call stupid feet. And you can understand that we've got a lot of stupid parts of our body. No, we're not aware watching what's going on. So when we start this meditation, once you've closed your eyes, the first mindfulness of the body is just how you're sitting. Now you may go to some meditation teachers who say you have to sit with a straight back. You have to sit full lotus. You have to put your right arm over your left arm. That is a lot of bullshit. And you get that from a very senior teacher who's famous throughout the world. So please, don't ever believe in that sort of rubbish. So you get that from high authority.
Laying down meditation.
Laying down meditation, but not here because you fall asleep and you start snoring. But, just in a chair, comfortable. You can get yourself just nice. When you're at home, fine, please do laying down meditation. Because it's great to be able to do that. But if you do laying down meditation, don't lay down in the same position you go to sleep in. When I do laying down meditation, for some reason I never go to sleep on my back. It's always on my side or my front, but never on my back. So my back, when I lay down on my back, that is reserved. to meditation. So psychologically, now my brain knows, oh, he's laying on his back, this is not the time for sleep, this is meditation time. And that really works. And if I'm really tired, turn over and then fall asleep. So have some posture if you do lying down meditation where you don't usually go to sleep with, so you can stay awake. But the whole idea of a posture is just so you're comfortable. So the first thing when you're sitting down here on the floor, you can lean against the wall, that's fine, or in a chair, is to feel your body. Is it comfortable? Now, of course, it won't be fully comfortable at first. So you adjust it. Now, wiggle your bottom. Just get your... if ever you go to any Buddhist temples, you see on our wooden floors how highly polished they are. Now you know why. For centuries, people with fat bums sitting on the floor, wiggling this way, wiggling that way. We don't have to do anything. You guys do it all. So, you sit down, get yourself nice and comfortable, and you ask the question of your body. A great way of encouraging mindfulness is to ask a question. Body, are you comfortable? Because when you ask a question like that, your awareness, your mindfulness goes on to the body to get an answer. You're looking. You know, am I really comfortable? And if the body says, no, I want my legs to be adjusted, I want my nose to be scratched, I need to cough, then please do so. Now, this is not the military where you have to resist all temptations to move. It's not like being in school when you were a kid. I still remember one headmaster telling me, stop fidgeting! And that really started me fidgeting. I was so scared. But please, you can fidget if you want. Be kind to your body, which is the next important part of meditation. Be aware, and then be kind. If you see it's a problem, then do something about it. Be kind to your body. Move, cough, scratch. And then when your body feels as comfortable as it can get on a chair, you've been mindful that's your first important thing, just be physically comfortable on the chair. Then the next part of it, you take it even deeper, where you're mindful of small parts of your body, maybe inside. There's still a bit of hay fever left. I've still got a bit of itchy throat. So I'm sure when I start meditating in a few minutes, my mindfulness will go to my itchy throat. And feel it. Be aware of it. And see what you need to do. The attitude of the mind, because you can't scratch it. You can't move it. See what you need to do to relax that feeling. To take that feeling and make it less irritating, less of a problem, less of a disturbance for you. And because you're aware of the feeling in the throat, it gives you this thing we call feedback. You can actually see the feeling actually change. Sometimes it gets worse. And you notice, why did it get worse? What did I do to make it worse? Sometimes it just softens and really eases off. Why? What were you doing that made it ease off? And you'll soon discover that things like letting go, being kind, stop controlling, stop being afraid, you find those are the things which make your, say, itch or ache or irritation or even pain less painful. You're actually learning how to let go. Because so many people, when we teach meditation, say, yeah, I know I should let go, but how do I let go? This is how you learn. Just in your body, first of all. Because you find we've all got aches and pains somewhere in our body. Find one of them and then play with it. No, think letting go. Sometimes it doesn't work because it's not the real letting go, but when it's the real letting go, kindness, leaving things alone, you find it really relaxes. It gets so easy. And with some training, you keep doing that, you can relax any part of your body at will. So even when you're at, you've been really working hard and you lay down, you can feel the ache in your legs or, you know, in your bottom or in your shoulders if you've been lifting stuff. You can feel all of that and be mindful of it and you can will it to relax. You know, just you let go of the pressure, because what's happening? know, inside of us, we're stressing things, pulling two ends, or squashing things, or just trying to control things. That stops relaxation happening. So you can imagine it's a tight part in your body. You can imagine it's like a string being pulled by, you know, two invisible monsters on either end. And that's, you know, in your body. You learn how to let go. So there's no pressure on you at all. Nothing being stretched. You're not being pulled. There's no pressure on you in your body. Or if there's a tight piece of ache or pain somewhere, you can imagine just letting it go, letting it expand. I like visualizing like a sponge, like a bath sponge that's been squashed up. And then you just take off the pressure so it expands, becomes really light and fluffy, not a problem anymore. So those are the imaginations, the visualizations, the attitudes which you find actually relieve the aches and pains in the body. And you go right through the body. Maybe the knee is a bit of a problem for you, you relax it, then you go somewhere else, you relax that. Now this really works. Just last week I just got an email from someone, arthritis. And they're having all these very heavy steroids. And they say, they listen to me online, and they've thrown away all their steroids, they've got no pain anymore. This old lady, and she's just amazingly happy, you know. But please don't you do that without doctor's prescriptions, otherwise Rachel will get sued, we'll get thrown out of here. But you know, you can try a little bit of that, little by little, try and see what happens. And it works for some people. You can actually let go of all these aches and pains in the body. And you really relax. And you feel the whole body relaxed. And for me, it's just like those times when you know, when I was young, you'd wake up in the morning and really cozy in bed. You feel so relaxed in your bed. And you don't have to get up. It's a Sunday morning. And you just relax in there. Does that feel nice? Now that type of feeling, the delight, the relaxed body, is important for you to notice and recognize and indulge in. Because once your body is really relaxed and it feels delightful, please enjoy it. Because what happens is you get more relaxed. More relaxed than you've probably ever been for weeks. And you're sitting here in this beautiful, relaxed body, feeling great. And whatever diseases, illnesses or whatever else you have, it's amazing the results which that have on your bodily illnesses. Obviously I teach that to cancer groups a lot because it works. And girl with arthritis the other day, anxiety attacks, this is really powerful stuff. That's why every time I go to Toronto, because you go there every couple of years, now I always have to, they see I'm coming, they invite me to the university, because they've got a course there, a degree course in medical faculty, Buddhism, medicine and psychology. This is part of their medicine course. So, because they know these things are actually powerful stuff and it works. So, and you can do it for yourself and you feel so relaxed. Next thing is we try and relax our mind. So the body comes first. The reason we do this is because you're much more aware of your body than you are of your mental world. But you get your body really relaxed first of all. And then you imagine your mental world exactly the same as your body. You've got so many aches and pains in there, so much tension and tightness in your emotional world. So many worries, fears, traumas, bad memories. That's like the pain in the body. This is in the mind. So what do we do? Exactly the same. Be aware, learn how to relax the mind. Meditate is not about concentrating the mind. Please never do that. That just makes you more of a pain in the neck for the people you live with. Relax your mind. Relax. Okay, those guys will look after it. So, when you relax the mind with no worries at all, that means that you can look at the part which is painful, irritating, a problem for you, and do exactly the same. You're mindful of that mental irritation and see what makes it worse, see what makes it better. For example, you may have a problem with your past. What happened today? What happened earlier on in your life? Some bad experience from the past. Now, when you have a bad experience from the past, don't just try and get rid of it. Just be aware of it, be mindful of it, and see what makes it less. What makes it vanish. And sometimes you can see that when you're afraid of it, when you try and get rid of it, now that past trauma gets harder. It gets more of a problem. When you just learn a little bit of kindness, letting go, you find that memory from the past actually gets softer, not much of a problem. In the same way, an ache or a pain in the body gets less intense when you just leave it alone and be kind to it. So what you're doing is you're learning how to let go and be kind. And so that past problem gets softer and less hard, less heavy, until you can soften it and soften it and soften it, until just like an ache or a pain in the body, it vanishes. It falls off the radar. The same with worries about your future. You know, you don't just try and get rid of it. You're aware of it. Feel how heavy it is, and just how you can make it lighter and lighter and lighter, just like an itch on the body, how it can just get easier and easier and easier, until it vanishes. So you're actually softening the emotional world, and soon your past and future problems just get so light they vanish, and your mind feels great, it feels light, instead of having all these heavy pains and aches and irritations in it. Well, well done. Very good.
Twice in 22 years, in a month.
Yes, but now you sorted it out. All done. What do you do? We just
looked at it.
Wow.
And it stopped.
Excellent. So that's actually how you soften these things up when they disappear and they vanish. That's what I was talking about in here. You see, so you were mindful and you were kind and it stopped. Now, honestly, that machines actually do. We've had some great fun with my machine stories, with mindfulness and kindness. Absolutely true story. I'm going over time a bit, but it's a great story. You can do this with machines, messing around with them, because there's one of our students spent a year over at Monastery in Serpentine, and he went back to university in Germany, and first day on campus, he passed an ATM machine. And the ATM machine made a sound. He called it like a gurgling sound. He didn't know what it was and why he did it then. Probably just coincidence. But he interpreted that as the ATM machine welcoming him onto campus. So every time after that, because, you know, he'd been my student, so it was a bit wacky. Every time after that, he'd always say, good morning, to the ATM machine when he passed it. And was really kind to it. Gave it a lot of loving kindness. And after about 6 months of that, and he swore to me that this was absolutely true, he did not make this story up. He was having his lunch within about 5 or 10 meters of the ATM machine. No, on a bench, no one else was around. And after about 5 or 10 minutes sitting there, no one had came close to the machine. That ATM made the same sound as when he first came onto campus. The gurgling sound. And he turned around to look at the ATM machine. And a 20 euro note came out of the slot. No one had put in a card. No one had keyed in any PIN numbers. It just came out all by itself. So he went over, took it, he actually said, he waved it up, does this belong to anybody? No one claimed it, of course they didn't claim it, because his ATM machine, because it was kind to it, it looked after him. The moral of that story is, if you need a few dollars and you're a bit short, go up to an ATM machine and just stroke it, nice ATM machine. May you never get robbed. May you never run out of cash. May no one ever hit you when they find out they've got no bank balance left. May you be happy and well. Cough up.
Pulled you out the wall with my four-wheel drive.
No, be kind to it. No threats. That'll actually happen. Weird, but there's many stories like that which are true. So be kind to machines. So you were kind to that machine, so the alarm went off. I don't know about the fire, that's probably coming around the corner in a minute. Never mind.
I think security switched it on.
Okay, very good. No, no, it's your kindness. Come on. Anyway, that's actually how we relax our mind. So our mind becomes delightfully relaxed. There's a delight in mental relaxation. When it does, enjoy it. Because that gives your mind enormous health and resilience. Your poor mind is so tired. It's had to deal with so much. And all it needs is a bit of a rest and relaxation. So your mind can be healthy, just like your body. So this is what we call like meditation. Learning how to relax the mind. Towards the end of the meditation, I start to introduce the breath, which is another way, just making it a little bit easy for you to relax. But I will introduce that as we go along. So in order I don't get into any trouble, I better start meditating now. So, any questions? No? Good. Always say that every time. So if you'd like to get into meditation posture, I've got my little cushion over there. I will guide you all the way, so you have nothing to fear. Ajahn Brahm is here. Well, you keep laughing, you encourage me.
Good.
Yeah, I need to encourage you. Okay, here we go. Ooh, okay, sort of see the clock. Here we go.
So what
happened? The only reason I sit on the floor is because I got trained like this for 9 years or so. I'm actually comfortable here. Much better than on a chair. So, close your eyes. And as I said, with your eyes closed, be aware of how you are sitting. And ask yourself, body, can I make you more comfortable? Your body will give you an answer. And you need to make sure your bottom is not uncomfortable. Mine is. I didn't put it properly on the cushion. Is any part of your clothing too tight? Check your back. Sometimes, you know, lean back, lean forward until you find the optimum position. Sometimes you need to scratch something. You need to sneeze or cough. Or you all. Spend at least a couple of minutes just adjusting your body. Don't think that it's comfortable. Look more. Sometimes people like to do a couple of deep breaths and just get relaxed. Please also notice how comfortable your hand position is. You all know that people fidget their hands because the hands aren't comfy. Get your hands nicely comfortable. Once your body is comfortable, by which I mean moving it or scratching it or coughing doesn't make it more comfortable, now see if we can relax it even more deeply. be aware of your body, part of the body which is irritating or itchy or even painful. Feel that part of the body. Be aware, be mindful of it. And now continue observing that part of the body, feeling it. Don't mean looking at it, I mean just feeling, experiencing it. And see how that irritation, that pain, see what makes it worse. See what makes it better. Try imagining letting go or being kind or opening the body. See if it makes any difference. The mindfulness gives you the feedback. It's like looking at a dial on the dashboard of your car. Shows you whether they're going too fast or too slow, whether you've got enough fuel or you're running on empty. Here you're looking on the dial of relaxation in your own body. So my legs are a bit tight, so I can feel sensations in my legs, and I know how to relax them. To let them be. It's like they are under pressure and I relieve that pressure. Imagine them like they're just on very soft cotton cushions, sinking in, letting go of all tightness. If there's any stretching, I let go of the ends, so there's no stretching anymore. Everything is loose. I let go. And I associate that attitude which relaxes my body, that is what I associate with letting go. That's its meaning. Once you've dealt with one part of the body, you've relaxed it. Deal with another part. My intestines seem a little bit sore. I don't know what I ate today. So I feel that sensation. I'm mindful. And I soon discover, because the feedback for mindfulness, what makes that feeling in my guts worse, what makes it better. A little bit of kindness, softness, letting go. And I keep my mindfulness at that place long enough to see the feeling relax. And this is very helpful because you're getting some reward. Something you can actually experience, this is working. That helps the mindfulness stay. It's not boring anymore. It's working. You may have some other irritations and pains. Aches. Be mindful of them. And don't take the mindfulness away until it's really relaxed. Sometimes I imagine kindness. Beautiful, warm gentleness. Somebody cares. It takes a lot of the pain away. So it's like your mind is caring for parts of your body which often we abuse, caring for it, wishing it well. Feeling that part of the body start to balance itself. Things move. And they move towards deeper sense of peace, relaxation, ease, happiness. Whatever tight parts of your body, irritating parts of the body, you relax them part by part. And always go back to them if they still need more attention. Until you start to feel your body, just as if it's just been to a massage. Just woken up in the Sunday morning. It's really cozy, relaxed. So there's no pressure on it at all. Every blood vessel, every muscle, every ligament, every bone is at ease. Any of those not at ease, be mindful of them and relax them. So your body is not tense at all. It's open, not stretched, not taut with fear. Totally at ease, relax. Soon, hopefully, you can experience the delight of relaxation. It's really nice. Once you notice the delight, the physical pleasure of relaxation, you'll discover you get more relaxed. The body loosens even more. Enjoy that delight of relaxation. It's a great cause of health and resilience to diseases or injury. Sometimes you can just stay there as long as you want. Sometimes you can move to the next stage in meditation, relaxing your mental world. Because there are tight parts in your emotional world, wounded parts, and these heavy burdens from the past weighing you down, bruising you, wounding you. There's also these fears and anxieties of the future, like pulling you, like stretching you, causing tautness and tension in the mind so you can't just let go and relax. But whichever one that is, the burden from the past or something in the future, always calling and pulling at you, be aware of that, be mindful of it. But especially be mindful of its quality of irritation, disturbance. Just see what you need to do to make it less of an irritation, less heavy. We are softening the past, relaxing the future. Like lessening its weight. Like these things are agitating us, and we're loosening. One thing at a time, like you watch one part of the body at a time, relax it, loosen it, until it vanishes. It's one problem of the past, one fear or anxiety for the future at a time. Be mindful, gives you feedback on how to relax until it's so soft it vanishes. Begin to notice the type of joy or pleasure or the relax might. If you can notice that, you go deeper into mental relaxation. Duties keep pulling at you. Just relax the pull. Soften things. It's usually the fear which stops you letting go. Just relax the fear. Soon you'll be aware that you're in this wonderful place we call the present moment, just now. And it's usually the case that when one starts to become aware of the present moment, one also becomes aware of the breathing. It's your breath coming in and out of your body. And the breath comes in softly, it's a sign of relax. So it's good to watch the breath and relax it even more. And to do that, I encourage you, as you breathe in, to imagine peace coming in with your in-breath. And as you breathe out, let go. Breathe in peace. Breathe out, let go. And don't just say these words. Imagine peace. However you can visualize it or feel it, imagine it coming into your body, into your mind with every in-breath. And whatever you need to let go of, sickness, pain, disappointment, whatever that is, imagine that leaving your body and mind with every out-breath. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go.
getting very close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? What's it like inside? Close to the end of a meditation. Now be mindful of generally how relaxed you become. We'll now ring the gong 3 times. When the gong finishes for the 3rd time, open your eyes and come out of the meditation.
So, you got any questions in the back there? Wow! Heaps!
Oh, God.
Crikey. Well, 2. That's heaps.
We gave lots to us in afterlife.
Okay. Here we go. I think I need the lights.
Yeah, they'll come on if I...
Dear Ajahn Brahm, could you please give us... Ooh, now they come on.
We don't need those on.
Okay. Okay. Maybe turn them off again then.
Please all come on. Please.
Could you please give us some advice on dealing with abusive, controlling people? Yes, 1, run away. And 2, refuse. If you can't run away, refuse to be controlled by them. One of my stories, not all monks are nice and soft and cuddly like me. There was this one monk, we found out afterwards he had these chronic migraines, which made him just very, very sometimes angry and nasty. And one day I was cleaning my bowl, and he came up to me, and he looked over me and said, "Brahm, that's a filthy thing you're doing." I can't actually. I've tried my very best to do acting, but I really should go to acting school. I just can't, I can't do it.
Pretty good.
Was it good, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, really? Amazing. Okay, I'm getting better. He's just getting really sort of angry at me. And it's in front of everybody else. And what else was I doing wrong? I was wiping my bowl with a rag. He said, "That's a filthy thing to do." And of course, the first thing you do when you're criticised in public like that by this control freak, you look around. And all the other monks were doing the same. "We've been doing this for weeks. What's the big deal?" So, the first thing which I thought was, to defend myself. "Why are you doing this to me? This is unfair. We always do it this way. What's the big deal?" But I was smart enough to realise there's another way of dealing with this. Because I realised everyone had stopped what they were doing and were watching me. How would he react? And I used, self-control. And I looked at this really controlled freak monk and I said, "Sorry." And I went up to another bag, to another place, and got another cloth and walked back again. I could feel all the eyes watching me as I went over there and all watching me as I went back, see what's going to happen next. And I started washing my bowl with the cloth he wanted. And then I looked at him. And he went bright red. And just went away. And he never tried to control me ever again. Sometimes embarrassment is an amazing thing. Because sometimes they're controlling. What are they trying to do? It's not trying to teach me to, you know, wipe my bowl with the correct cloth. That wasn't the point. He was just trying to have a go at me, trying to upset me. And I refused to get upset. And that's what embarrassed him. If I'd have got upset back and said, "Who are you to say this to me?" then I would have been feeding his control. So sometimes when people get angry and upset at you, they're trying to wind you up to get some reaction out of you. They're trying to make you suffer and spoil your day. Refuse to let anyone control your happiness. That's what they're trying to do. To steal, to take away your peace. And you know, that is your possession, that is your responsibility. They can take other things away from you, but not my peace. The trouble is that when people try to control you, they're looking for your weak points, your buttons. And once they find out where those buttons are, they'll keep pressing them. They have you. They can control you all the time. Ajahn Brahm, you're fat. So what do? You don't say, he says, "No, I'm not fat. I just beat anorexia." You say something which makes people laugh. Or whatever. But you don't make them sort of upset you. Now this is the trouble. When people try to control you, they abuse you. They try to criticize you. You're stupid. What's wrong with being stupid? This is a free country. We should have stupid people's rights. I demand my right to be stupid. Whatever it is, because they're not making you angry then. But the main thing is one of what I learned, trained by teachers in Thailand. The worst thing you could ever call somebody in Thailand was to call them a dog. That was the worst. So, I was taught that if someone ever calls you a dog, don't get angry yet. Have a look at your bottom first to see if you've got a tail. Because if you haven't got a tail, you can't be a dog. End of problem. That's a wonderful little, you know, simile there. If they try to wind you up, get you upset by calling you a dog, do you deserve being called a dog? Have you got a tail? So find out, first of all, if you haven't got a tail, you're not a dog, end of problem. The difficulty is when people try to criticize you, you actually believe them. When someone calls you stupid, the only reason you get upset is because you believe they may be right. If you do get upset, actually, that you are stupid. Why do you allow other people to control you like that? And if you can resist being controlled by people, you don't get upset. They'll try it once, they'll try it twice, and after a while they'll give up. They just can't control you. Or, like this wonderful story of, what's her name, Julie, over in Sydney. She was one of my students, done a lot of meditation, and she had a little business doing fashion business, dresses and stuff. And she started getting very successful. And she had this big deal with this distributor in England. And lots of emails, lots of phone calls. Now it was time to sign the contract. And this was going to take her business to another level. So they said, "Come to England straight away, come to London." And she had this, you know, little girl called Holly, and a really cute little girl. And I was her muck. So she had to leave Holly in Sydney while she, you know, with the husband, to travel all the way to London, the first available flight. You can imagine how far that is. Sydney to London. Soon as she arrived at Heathrow, just had enough time to check into a hotel, get changed, shower, and go to the boardroom for the meeting, which would, you know, make or break for her company. High stress. And as soon as she got into the boardroom, the directors were there, but not the CEO. And as soon as the director said, "What are you doing here?" "I'm Julie from Sydney." "Oh, yeah. You have wasted your time," they said. "The CEO is in a really bad mood, a filthy mood today. He's shouting and swearing at everybody. There's no way you're going to get your contract signed today. That's one of those people who are really abusive. You know, the boss from hell. When I say the boss from hell, everyone says, yeah, I've got one too. And some of you are bosses, so add one and one together. Hope it's not you. But there's too many of those abusive, controlling bosses. So anyway, she said, well, I've come all this way. I'm just going to see the guy anyway. So she refused to leave. Suit yourself, you'll be here in about a quarter of an hour. So what did he do? She sat in the corner and meditated. Meditated on this beautiful kindness to all beings. And so 15 minutes later, this CEO, in a filthy mood, burst into the boardroom. And what was the first thing he saw? What's she doing in my boardroom? Get out! Is that better? Okay. Thank you very much. A little bit more space. And he was really angry, you know, seeing this lady meditating in the boardroom in London. And so Julie, you know, she came out of her meditation. She stood up and she walked towards this monster. And what she told me, it was a wonderful story. These words just came out of her mouth, unpremeditated, they just came by themselves. She looked at this monster, you know, just about to sort of devour her, with his big red eyes, almost coming out of their sockets with anger. And she said to her, you've got such beautiful blue eyes like my baby Holly back in Sydney. She complimented him. And that was something which he just could not process. Because every time he tried to abuse and control people, he'd either got cowering, fear, or just, no, I'm not going to take that, I'm going to give as good as I get. And this woman just gave a compliment back. And she said that CEO just stood there with all the brain fusing all over the place, didn't know what to do. And just in those couple of minutes, he just stood there, his whole face softened. And when he did speak, he said, really? I've got beautiful blue eyes? And she had the contract signed in 5 minutes. And having got her contract signed, she wanted to go home. Or go to the hotel, get a rest. It's jet lag, came all the way from Sydney. But she then said that all the executives, the directors, they all surrounded her in a circle. So we're not letting you go until you teach us how the hell you did that. Now that is actually one way of dealing with control freaks. Compliment them. Do something they just do not expect. And then you find, actually this was, when I get some interesting gigs. When I was in Indonesia early this year. And it was a big sort of discussion with this TV personality who had, about 2 weeks before, had interviewed the biggest Islamic terrorist in Indonesia on TV. A live interview. And of course everyone was watching this. And sort of, in the end, he's a very smart guy. He said what changed the whole attitude was actually he complimented this man. He said, you're not a terrorist, you're just a holy man. And that compliment took away all the anger from that guy. And the whole atmosphere changed. I never saw that myself, but people were actually talking about it. And just, if you get an abusive, controlling person, try giving them a compliment. See what happens. Interesting. Because they're not really expecting that. They're abusing. And they want anger back. They're pushing your buttons to try and get some negativity back. And of course negativity just feeds more negativity. And it gets worse and worse and worse. So, obviously, if it is someone who's physically abusive, for goodness sake, get out of that relationship. You know, go to a refuge or somewhere. Because well, that can be really, really dangerous for you. As you see with domestic abuse. But, you know, if it's not that bad yet, you don't want to make it worse, there is these other ways of doing it. And the other most important way of doing it is somebody is abusive, someone's controlling, they're obviously in a terrible, terrible physical state. They're not always abusive, they're not always controlling. No one's always like that. A lot of time they are. But every now and again, they have these moments when they're acting like a decent human being. Those moments, compliment them, praise them, let them know that good behavior is noticed and appreciated. I say this because a long time ago, you know, when domestic violence was not really on the agenda of the government or the law, when women had to just deal with it, and there's this incredible times what happened. But there was this woman who used to come to our center in Olamara, and after she came to see me once, and she said, "Thank you for saving my life." And when people say that, you know, you say, "What happened?" And she said she was a victim of quite severe domestic violence. Must be about 30 years ago now. Husband was hitting her. And you can understand, you know, you don't need to be a psychologist. A woman in such a situation, she's not clear enough. No, she's tired. No, she loves that person. She wants to commit to that relationship. And there's this terrible, terrible abuse happening. She doesn't know what to do or where to go. So never actually blame the woman, because it's just incredibly confusing. You're not clear. But she did come to our temple. She wasn't a Buddhist. She told me she only came there because 1 hour in the temple was 1 hour when she wasn't getting hit. But what she learned was something amazing. Exactly what I just said. There's something else to your husband. The part which isn't abusive. Now notice that, and every time, you know, he behaves like a decent human being, let him know it. And she did that. She said it took her 7 years. But she was one of these heroes. I don't recommend this, but you know, but what she did was just incredible. She said every time he treated me properly, I gave him a hug, gave him a smile or something to reinforce that good behavior. And now 7 years later, she has this incredibly beautiful relationship. She actually changed a monster into a saint. And she brought him to a monastery. A really nice guy. They had 2 incredibly beautiful kids. She is one of my heroes. Now that was extreme. Not to be recommended. But it just shows you the sort of things which can be done. If you are in a controlling, with a control freak, an abusive relationship, at work or at home, see if you can reinforce the behavior which you'd like to see in your partner or in your boss. And if you can do things like that, you know, sometimes you can turn people around. In the same way that you can look at the part of yourself, now the part you don't like, but the part you're really proud of. I call that, in brief, watering the flowers or watering the weeds. If you keep watering the flowers grow. The good parts in yourself or your partner. Keep watering the weeds. Keep focusing and responding, you know, to the bad behavior of other people. That bad behavior gets encouraged. Water flowers, not weeds. Next question, just quickly. Dear Ajahn Brahm, are you omniscient? I knew you were going to ask that question. Omniscient? You don't know everything. No one knows everything. So, what is a wise person is one who knows they don't know. So yeah, you're omniscient in that sense. I know that I don't know. You don't have to know everything. In fact, it's a pain in the butt if you know everything, because people keep asking you so many questions. I keep on saying it's wonderful if you're stupid, and then people leave you alone. But Oh, just like sometimes people, they always try to impress other people. It's a stupid thing to do. If you impress your boss at work, you get promoted. Do you want to get promoted? Haven't you got enough stress already? And don't think that, oh, if I get promoted, then I get more money. Look, it doesn't matter how much money you get at work, it's never enough. So better the not enough you're earning right now, than the not enough you're going to earn later on with more stress if you get promoted. So if I was you, I'd just, just enjoy what you've got, which is not enough, and just have less stress in life. That's a wonderful time now. Many people are losing their jobs. They're so lucky. Who wants to go to work on a Monday morning? Okay, you know, you get more time. You haven't got much money anymore. You can downsize. It's easy. Easy. Look at me. I downsize. I've only got one pair of clothes. This is it. These go and it's, I've got nothing left. So it's much easier that way. Any questions or comments about that? What I said before? Not that I'm listening to one, that's a bit of a silly one. But the one before about if you're in a controlling relationship. Any questions? I haven't told a joke today, have I?
You've been very serious.
Very serious, okay. Here's a very bad joke, first of all. And if you want something else afterwards. Because there's a couple of kids, you know, about 8 or 10 year old, who always come on a Friday night, and they always ask me for a joke. And so I didn't have one, so I had to make one up. So I made one up. And I said, this is the joke which I made up the other night. And said, what very well-known TV talent show was won by a chicken recently? What TV talent show was won by a chicken? It's obvious. The X Factor.
Clean.
Of course it was clean. Yes. You want a naughty one? Okay, here's a naughty one. Sometimes when monks tell naughty jokes, it's even more funny because there's a monk. It just shows we're human. This blonde. It's a blonde joke. If you're blonde, don't worry, because the blonde is smart in this one. The blonde walks into a casino and looks like she's a bit drunk. She acts a bit drunk. And she goes to the dice table and she said, $20,000 on one throw. That's a big bet. And will you accept it? And the dealers, two dealers there, two guys, said, yeah, of course. He said, but, she said, I always feel more lucky when I take my clothes off. So she stripped naked. And then she threw her two dice and said, Mama, make me lucky, I need the money. And she threw the dice. And then she screamed, yes, I won, woohoo! And the dealers had to give her her winnings. And as she walked off with her winnings and her clothes in her arm, one of the dealers said, well, but you know, what number did she throw? She said, I don't know, I wasn't looking, I thought you were watching. No, it's the men who are the dumb ones, not the blonde women. That's men being men. Okay, so that's the joke for tonight. So it's not really serious. So there we go, I'll pass. Any more questions, comments, complaints? You want another joke?
Yes, please.
Okay, another joke. What was the other joke we were talking about? Sorry?
I think you should tell your story of the girl who commented on your dress.
A long time ago?
Yeah, they haven't heard it. It just fits in with your talk.
How about being abused?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but that wasn't actually much abuse because
that
was a long time ago. We were just building our monastery and we were loading up the old, we had our VW van. Actually, it was amazing, just a amount of stuff that old VW van would actually carry. So much stuff, I went to pick up a whole lot of wood. When the mill at Sharondale was there, inside and on the top and everywhere else, you could hardly get in it for wood. And the guys there said, you guys must pray a lot to get this to work. We did. they worked okay. But this time we're bunging stuff in North Perth in the back of the van. This girl came out, maybe about 13 years of age. And she came up and looked at me with utter disgust. As only a 13-year-old girl could do. Hands of this. Look me up and down. You're dressed like a girl. That's sick. She said. So, that was it. I thought it was really good fun.
And your reaction?
I just burst out laughing. The way she was saying it was just so funny, over the top. But even better than that, just on Leech Highway once, in that car, same old car, in those days, no aircon, on a hot summer's day. So the windows were open, we pulled up to a red light, and then the car next to us, also pulled up next to us, a bunch of guys, 18, 19 year olds. just having a fun. They saw, looked in the car, saw there was a monk in there. So know what they did? They got out a magazine and they're looking at me. They wanted me to look at their magazine. The red traffic light. You know what the magazine was? Playboy, yeah. They wanted to wind up a monk. And what did I do?
Laugh,
yeah. Did I look at it? No. Then how did I know it was Playboy? My driver told me. That's my excuse, my story. So sometimes people like to wind you up. When they do, you just play along with them. Don't get upset, for goodness sake. They're just trying. A lot of times people are just trying to have a laugh. And when they do, you can just have a laugh with them. It's an important part, especially religious leaders, they should have a sense of humour, for goodness sake.
Absolutely.
That's a problem with ISIL, they've just got no sense of humour. Okay, what's the terrorist jokes? Oh, the terrorist joke I should have told you. About this guy went in an aircraft. Please tell me if I told this last week, 2 weeks ago. Went in an aircraft, he had a window seat, and there was a guy in the aisle seat, and in between them was a dog. There's a dog on the aircraft. He said, you can't have a dog sitting on the aircraft, sitting in a seat, even though it's economy class. He said, and the guy on the RC said, look, I'm his trainer. This is security dog. Because of lots of terrorist attacks, so you have to be very careful now. And he said, look, I'll show you how it works. So he sent the dog down the aisle. He sniffed this backpacker, and the dog came back, and he barked, woof, once, and wagged its tail. And the handler said, oh, amazing, that's the signal for marijuana. That guy's carrying drugs. We'll arrest him on the other end. Let's see what else is on this plane. So he sent the dog up to business class, and then he sniffed a well-dressed woman, came back, barked twice, woof, woof, and wagged his tail even more ferociously. That's the signal for cocaine. We'll arrest her when we get there. You see what's up in first class. So he sent the dog up to first class, and there he sniffed this really well-dressed businessman. Came back, woof, 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 three barks, and really wagging his tail very, very violently now. Ah, that is heroin. It's a heroin smuggler on here as well. It's amazing. Let's see what else we can find. So he sent the dog back to economy class, and the dog sniffed this guy with a turban on and came back whining with his tail between his legs. He jumped up on the seat and pooed all over the seat. And the handler said, oh my goodness, that's code for there's a bomb. Okay, enough, get out of here. I know that's what you're coming for.